This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, Ugandan opposition supporters remain defiant despite the death of another one of their members.
And this is a warning to people in police. You're going to be used to commit crime. You will certainly pay for these crimes, without a doubt. Ugandans are not going to allow to be killed by grasshoppers.
Also ahead, Cameroon's Electoral Council has ordered a rerun of National Assembly elections in the country's violence-torn English-speaking regions. Plus, Ethiopia says it won't take part in talks scheduled this week with Egypt and Sudan over the controversial Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Nile River. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us on Africa News Tonight. Parts of northern Italy are on lockdown following an outbreak of the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19, with at least 7 deaths in the region. Sudden outbreaks in recent days from South Korea to Iran to Italy have raised fears that the virus, which originated in China, will spread around the world even more than it already has. A new report warns that Southeast Asian and sub-Saharan African economies could be badly hit. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Northern Italy is the epicenter of Europe's coronavirus outbreak. In the regions of Lombardy and Veneto, several small towns have been put on lockdown and 50,000 people have been told to stay at home. Supermarket shelves are emptying of basic goods, even in big cities like Milan. Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte urged citizens to heed government advice. He said this discomfort and sacrifice, which for now is intended for 14 days, I hope will prove to be effective to contain the spread of the virus. But with new cases reported in other Italian regions and in Spain and Switzerland, health authorities are struggling to contain the virus. Virologist Dr. Stergios Moskos of Britain's University of Northumbria says it's vital people do all they can to stop its spread.
The containment procedure is there to effectively dampen down the intensity of transmission and stretch it out, so to prevent an overload in healthcare settings.
Iran is one of the worst affected nations outside China, with hundreds of infections and more than a dozen confirmed deaths. South Korea is also badly hit, and the US government has advised against all non-essential travel there. In China, where the virus first appeared in late December, infections have topped 77,000, with more than 2,500 deaths. Again, Dr. Stergios Moskos.
The window of opportunity for stopping this disease from becoming a pandemic is narrowing very fast. The entire community at the moment is anticipating this will eventually develop into a pandemic. However, I have to point out that in the past we've had similar fears, and what has happened is that viruses just die away.
The global economic cost could hit $360 billion, according to a report from the Overseas Development Institute, or ODI, which warns sub-Saharan Africa stands to lose $4 billion in export revenue. Oil and copper prices are sharply down, and big exporters to China, such as Angola, are suffering. The ODI says Sri Lanka, Vietnam, and the Philippines will be worst hit. Sherilyn Raga is co-author of the report.
Everybody's looking back at the SARS impact in 2003. But of course, if we look back, China is now 4 times bigger than during the time of the SARS outbreak. And it's more connected to the world now through global value chains and manufacturing sector.
Scientists are racing to produce a vaccine for the virus, with the first human trial scheduled for April. By then, the COVID-19 outbreak could be a full pandemic, with serious consequences for national health systems and the global economy. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Burundi police say they killed 22 armed, quote, wrongdoers, end quote, in clashes outside Bujumbura. and claims the group was planning to stir up unrest using the lead-up to the May presidential elections as distraction. Authorities say two members of the police force were killed and six attackers were captured. The police also say residents tipped them off that gunmen were hiding in coffee plantations in the Nyabirapa district. But the Associated Press cited local sources as saying that at least 12 people were executed Sunday in Nyabirapa after being arrested by police and a ruling party youth group. The election in May will choose a successor to President Pierre Nkurunziza, a former rebel leader who has held power since 2005. The previous election in 2015 was marred by a coup attempt, clashes, and a deadly crackdown amid widespread protests against President Nkurunziza's ultimately successful pursuit of another term. Since then, dozens of activists and dissidents have been arrested, killed, or have fled the country. A United Nations official has visited Zimbabwe and urged African governments to do more to reach the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. Columbus Mavunga reports from the resort town of Victoria Falls, where the UN is holding a forum.
33-year-old Xolani Moyo says poverty and hunger are all he thinks of when he wakes up. It has been like that since he dropped out of school after his father died, and he has not escaped the poverty cycle. Pointing to his fowl, Moyo says, I only have two chickens. That's all I have. If you want to give me something and you want a collateral, I have to surrender myself. I do not even have a decent home. There is hunger here as we have to buy food from shops. If you plant crops, sun burns them, or excessive rains destroy the plants. I wish the old man, that's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, would come here and I would tell him to create opportunities for employment. At the moment, they, that's government officials, give jobs to those that are close to them. If there were many employment opportunities, that would not be a problem. But they are not there, he said, sitting next to his bedroom made of poles and mud. He says he's concerned the building will fall on him one day because it has been raining a lot lately and the mud is peeling off. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said his government was making strides in fighting poverty and hunger in Zimbabwe by investing in renewable energy, health, education, agriculture, and infrastructure.
The African continent contributes less to climate change, yet it is the most severely affected continent. Mitigation of climate change must be prioritized. Climate change is real, as evidenced by the droughts that are ravaging our continent. In Southern Africa, we experience the wrath of climate change through cyclones Idai and Kenneth last year in 2019, as well as the recurring droughts. For us in Zimbabwe, the ripple effects of climate change were felt in every sector of our society.
The United Nations says recurring droughts and the collapsing economy have resulted in more than half of Zimbabwe's population being food insecure. At the meeting in Victoria Falls, Amina Mohammed, the United Nations Deputy Secretary General, said Africa had to do more to fight poverty and hunger.
The absolute number of people living in poverty on the continent has been increasing since 2013. Owing in part to high population growth rates, that number has now reached 428 million people. Africa also has the highest prevalence of hunger, with 22.8 million people severely food insecure, many of whom have to go to bed hungry.
Mohammed made a plea to do more to address such problems in Victoria Falls on Zimbabwe's border with Zambia at the sixth session of the Africa Regional Forum on Sustainable Development. She said she was also concerned about gender inequality income inequality and a rising rate of youth unemployment in Africa. For people like Xolani Moyo, without a job, no safe drinking water or ablution facilities, he might one day smile to know that some people are concerned about his plight. But he wants action taken soon. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe.
Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak today was honored with a military funeral that focused on the former fighter pilot's career in the country's armed forces. Mubarak, who ruled from 1981 until he was ousted in the Arab Spring protests of 2011, died yesterday in a Cairo hospital. Egyptian television stations aired his state funeral, which current President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and other senior leaders attended. Mubarak was known as a dictator who crushed dissent while maintaining peace with Israel and building strong relationships with several Western governments, including the United States. After his ouster, Mubarak was jailed for his role in the deaths of hundreds of Arab Spring protesters. But he was freed in 2017, and many of his convictions were overturned following fellow General al-Sisi's rise to power. In Uganda, another activist has been killed as police faced off with supporters of opposition leader Bobi Wine's People Power Group. Several others were injured during the scuffle. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Youthful Dan Chayune was among the supporters of the People Power pressure group gathered along a highway in Nansana, a Kampala suburb, chanting People Power slogans as they waited to catch a glimpse of their leader, presidential hopeful Robert Kyagulanyi, a.k.a. Bobi Wine. Wine was returning from the barrio of another People Power supporter who was run over by a police patrol vehicle Monday. Police shot randomly to disperse the crowds. In the process, Chayune was shot dead. A People Power supporter who identified himself as Isaac witnessed the scene.
One of Bobi Wine's supporters who was waiting for him just to wave at him and say hello, just to wait and say bye-bye. Here in Nansana, that's where the gentleman has been shot right in the eye and killed. This is a real tragedy.
People Power spokesperson Joel Senyonyi says several other supporters were injured during the incident. He urged Ugandans to rise up and defend themselves against the continued police use of excessive force towards opposition supporters.
And this is a warning to people in police. You're going to be used to commit crime. You will certainly pay for these crimes, without a doubt. But two, Ugandans are not going to allow to be killed by grasshoppers. And this is a message to Ugandans out there. Ugandans of all ages, youth, the young, the old. If you remain silent in situations such as this, they're going to kill each one of us, you know, like they have begun. And so the idea now is to say we need to begin to defend our lives.
A police statement says Chayune, whose father is a police officer, was part of a rowdy crowd that disrupted traffic flow along the highway and disregarded orders to disperse. It said the crowd aggressively approached police, with some of them pelting officers with stones. The statement said police used batons, tear gas and bullets to disperse the group. The statement said the Inspector General of Police has ordered a thorough investigation of the shooting incident. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Ethiopia says it won't participate in talks this week with Sudan and Egypt on construction of the $4 billion U.S. dollar Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Nile. The talks were scheduled for Thursday and Friday in Washington. The U.S. has hosted several rounds of negotiations that also included the World Bank after years of trilateral negotiations failed. In a statement on Twitter, Ethiopia's ambassador to the United States, Fitzamarega, said, quote, Ethiopia will not sign any agreement that gives up its rights on how to use its own Nile water, end quote. A second statement by Ethiopia's Ministry of Water, Irrigation, and Energy, published by Ethiopia's state-owned media, said it would not take part in the meetings because it has not completed internal consultations. Ethiopia is building the dam near its border with Sudan on the Blue Nile, which flows into the Nile River. Ethiopia is seeking to increase energy production for its growing population and become Africa's biggest power exporter. But Egypt worries that the dam could reduce its water supply. Egypt has long claimed ownership of the bulk of the Nile's water. A senior South Sudanese official has rejected criticism that his country is a serious violator of human rights. In a speech to the UN Human Rights Council, the official said facts prove the opposite to be true. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the council session in Geneva.
Director General for Multilateral Affairs of South Sudan, Samuel Luate Lominsuk, praises the decisions and compromises made by his government. He says this has enabled the formation of a national unity government in the interest of sustainable peace and stability. He says his government is enforcing the agreement by negotiating peace with the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. At the same time, he says peace talks taking place with Sudan and the capital Juba are making progress. He says efforts to improve the human rights situation in this country are moving ahead. And this, he says, belies the UN Council's depiction of South Sudan as the worst country on earth in terms of human rights violations. He says this is contrary to the realities on the ground.
My government would like to reiterate that South Sudan has deep-rooted traditions and norms which compel us to respect one another in all aspects of life. Consequently, anyone who commits a crime touching a woman's dignity is severely punished.
A report published last week by the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan describes in detail what it calls the widespread and pervasive sexual and gender-based violence in the country. The report accuses both the government and opposition of deliberately starving the population as a tactic of war. The UN Commission is scathing in its criticism of the government, which it says is riddled with corruption. The South Sudanese government did not respond to the report at the time of its release. And during his address to the council, Lominsuk also did not acknowledge the report and its findings. Instead, he continued to stress the positive developments and improvements in the human rights situation in his country. He called on the council to remove South Sudan from item 4, which looks into human rights abuses in specific countries reserved for those deemed to be the worst violators. Countries that will come up for review under that item during this month-long session include North Korea, Myanmar, South Sudan, Iran, Burundi, Syria, and Venezuela. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon's Constitutional Council has ordered a rerun of the February 9th National Assembly election in a majority of the country's English-speaking regions. The English-speaking areas have experienced an armed insurgency against President Paul Biya's government since 2017, and rebels boycotted the recent vote. Biya's party was declared the winner of the election, but there were allegations of widespread irregularities and fraud by Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party. The opposition Social Democratic Front filed the complaint to the Constitutional Council and says it is ready for the rerun as the council's verdict cannot be appealed. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
It was a very happy opposition Social Democratic Front when Clément Atangana, Chief Justice of Cameroon's Constitutional Council, pronounced the verdict calling for the rerun of the February 9 National Assembly, lower house of parliament, election in a majority of the crisis-prone English-speaking regions. Among the hundreds of candidates, observers and supporters of the various political parties was Denis Kemlemo, spokesperson of the opposition Social Democratic Front and electoral candidate in the English-speaking Debialem administrative unit. Kemlemo says he is happy that the Constitutional Council, which has often been accused of being manipulated by President Paul Biya, is neutral in its judgment. Kemlemo says he is very thankful to God, who has inspired the Constitutional Council to render true justice for once, because he can strongly confirm as an eyewitness and a major player that no elections were held in a majority of the polling stations as voters fled for their lives. The Social Democratic Front was one of more than 40 political parties that filed petitions with the Constitutional Council stating that the National Assembly elections were marred by violence and massive fraud committed by the ruling party. Opposition leaders accused the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement of ballot stuffing. The opposition also accused the military sent by the government to protect voters from insurgents seeking to disrupt the polling of casting multiple votes for the ruling party. The government has denied the accusations. The Constitutional Council determined there was massive fraud by the ruling party assisted by the government. It found that the Elections Management Body ELECAM created new polling centers on the eve of the polling and informed only the ruling party of where the centers were created. The Constitutional Council also ruled that people identified as opposition supporters were chased from polling stations and that separatist fighters who had vowed to disrupt the elections prohibited a majority of voters from casting their ballots. Joseph Mbandam, lead counsel for the SDF, says the verdict reflects what transpired in the English-speaking regions where clashes between the military and separatists left scores dead on election day. He says the verdict of the Constitutional Council confirms that the separatist crisis in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions remains so violent that no just and credible elections can take place. Grégoire Owona, Assistant Secretary General of the ruling CPDM party, says the party is disappointed but will respect the verdict.
Nous sommes frustrés par cette dernière décision.
He says President Paul Biya's Cameroon People's Democratic Movement political party is very frustrated by the verdict because it worked so hard to secure victories in a majority of the English-speaking regions in spite of the crisis. He says as a Republican party, it accepts the verdict of the Constitutional Council and is already preparing for the rerun. According to Cameroon's electoral code, the verdict of the Constitutional Council cannot be appealed, and fresh elections have to be organized in a minimum of 20 days and a maximum of 40 days after the court verdict. But there are still fears the election may not be successful as the separatist crisis has continued with the military and rebels involved in running battles. More than 30 other petitions to partially or totally cancel the election due to fraud were rejected for lack of evidence. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Guinea's President Alpha Condé has suggested publicly for the first time that he could run for a third term if the national constitution is changed, a move likely to fuel unrest as the country tries to attract foreign investments to exploit its mineral wealth. Ghanaians vote on Sunday in a referendum on constitutional reforms that could allow Condé to stand again, and the prospect of him staying longer in office has already led to months of sometimes violent protests. That wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening to The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.